I'd like to introduce our next speaker. I think most of us know her, and we all have come to love her. She's been around in the program for a few months. What's 30 times 12? And she's someone near and dear to my heart. I've gotten lots and lots of words of wisdom from her, so we're going to share her with you today. And I'd like to introduce Benay.
My name is Benay, and I'm a compulsive overeater.
Hi.
I am in the program more than 30 times 12. I'm in the program 34 times 12. Came in 1974, and I have been abstinent 18 years. My quote for my talk is, we had asked ourselves why we shouldn't apply to our human problems the same readiness to change our point of view. And what they're referring to, this actually came from the chapter to the agnostics, and it had to do with relationships. And I didn't understand the connection at first, but what they meant was that they were actually talking about the Wright brothers who had made the airplane and how people doubted whether or not the airplane could fly, and they were talking about bridges and how the steel girders work together in order to support these large spanses. And they said in this chapter, if this actually was happening and people came to believe in this, then why wouldn't they believe in something that they was a concept as well, which was God, in order for them to take care of? And they call this chapter the bedevilments in AA meetings, the bedevilments of our minds. And very often I hear speakers refer to it that they live on page 52. This is page 52 in the big book. So that was the reference point. And then these are the bedevilments. It says, we were having trouble with personal relationships. Well, that was for sure for me. We couldn't control our emotional natures. I didn't really know any other way. We were a prey to misery and depression. By the time I found the program, and also while I was in the program, because if you do the math, I've been abstinent in 18 years, so there were many years where I wasn't abstinent. And one of the things that I have to tell you is that I have not missed a meeting in all of that time, except for once when I had surgery, and I was at home, and I wasn't able to get to a meeting. But I have been at a meeting, one meeting at least, for all of that time, regardless of whether I was abstinent or not. I just kept coming. I did not know where else to go. So the misery and depression, that's where the illness took me to. I was basically non-functional. This illness will take me to a point where I cannot function. Everything that an addict is comes out in me, all the lying, cheating, stealing, everything. It's not pretty. I have no control. It feels like when I ate that I had no control over myself, and the illness did have a life of its own. It absolutely took over my life, and I knew that. I knew that. And I didn't know how to stop that either. We had a feeling of uselessness. I was basically non-functional. We were full of fear. We were unhappy. Fear is usually the underlying character defect that just permeates my life. We were unhappy. We couldn't seem to be of real help to other people. Oh, I forgot. We couldn't make a living. And I'm going to talk about that. We couldn't be of real help to other people was not a basic solution of these bedevilments, more important than whether or not we should see newsreels of lunar flight. Of course it was. When we saw others solve their problem by the simple reliance upon the spirit of the universe, we had to stop doubting the power of God. Our ideas did not work, but the God idea did. So I want to tell you about the God idea for me. I was one of those people, and I had an experience yesterday coming here that was almost parallel, but it had like a different outcome. Well, it didn't. It had a similar outcome. The God idea for me when I first came into the program, I really didn't have anything except, no conception, no religious training, nothing. I called myself an American. I mean, I was affiliated with a religion, but it didn't operate in my life. I had no idea. I am one of those who had no idea about what God was like. And it's been formulated since I came into these rooms, and I have one now. I am one of those people who have an active, loving God that I rely upon and crave as I go through my days. And that is because of you. That is because of the steps, and that is because of the need that I had within me to... The need was to stop the addiction. That was the initial need, and there's no question about that. And that this is what this program is based on. So for me, the way it worked was I had this Band-Aid God. I didn't know how to define it any other way. So what they told me originally was, well, when you get into certain situations, why don't you just include God in the situation? So I was in the program about maybe 2 or 3 months, and I got stuck in a whole bunch of traffic on Route 18. And I said, okay, God, and I had to go somewhere. I said, okay, God, this is what they told me, and so I'm going to just turn this traffic over to you, and so be it. And the truth was the traffic broke eventually, and I was late, and it did work out. And that was very good for me. I mean, that's as basic as it gets. That's as simple as it was. And sometimes I go back to those kind of simple things because it really works for me, too. Let me just tell you what happened yesterday. On the way here, and this is new to me. It's my first time here. And I wanted to get here before the sun went down. There was an accident on the parkway, and it was stone dead stopped. No movement for 1 hour. And there was a big book on the seat next to me, and I was nervous about doing this today, so I opened it up, and for one hour, God gave me the opportunity to just sit and read and be with him. There was no tension. Now, the tension came when the flashing light where I was supposed to make that turn over here on 35, that's where the tension came. But there, it was 1 hour, and eventually the traffic moved. Eventually it moved. And I got to spend that time with my higher power. So I started out without anything. And as I went through time, and I'll tell you when this turned around for me, I was in the program 6 years. I was abstinent the first 3 years, solid abstinence. I was Miss OA. I was talking all over the place. And there were circumstances in my life that emotionally I could not handle. And there were cake crumbs in somebody's pan across the street, and that's where it started, and I picked up. And it was 3 years after that that I surrendered to the fact that this is how this program works. And I didn't have a clue how to get to the point where I had a God that operated in my life that I trusted and believed in that would help me to remain abstinent. And the way it worked was, number one, I had the willingness. And in that chapter, to the agnostic, that's exactly what they talk about. They talk about if you have just that little bit of willingness, that's all that God requires. It has to be, it could be, and I think in one of the meditation books, it talks about a mustard seed of willingness. Small drop, small turn. It's an internal turn. I think that what I talk about here is conceptual. I'm going to give it to you in my words, but it operates inside of me. It's something that happened. It happened because I no longer wanted the life to sit and binge continuously and have all of those other bedevilments. I wanted something more. And I didn't know how to get it. So I began to copy you. I followed you. I asked you what you did. I gravitated towards those people who had the kind of spirituality that I would like someday. They even had a tone in their voice or a look in their eyes that I wanted. I very much wanted it. Didn't know how to get there. So I began to do the things they did. I began to read a meditation every single day. This was all act-as-if stuff, all of it. Things happened in my life. I turned, small turns, towards God, going from not the outside in, which is how I do operate. You know, it takes me time to get to my inside, but this was operating from the inside out. I began to listen to the words, small passages that hit my heart. There was one day I was having a terrible time. I opened the book to a page, and it said, "We are operating on a different basis now, the basis of relying and trusting in God." I kept saying it to myself over and over and over and over again. I sought spiritual guidance. I sought emotional guidance. I went to therapy. I came to this program in 1974. I started therapy in 1976. I think there was one year where I was without it. The spiritual guidance that I went to, God bless you, were those people who, in AA as well as OA, when I started here, there were 4 meetings in New Jersey. And it was years before we had weekend meetings. Forget about retreats. And I was guided to go to those meetings, which were the mother company, which I did. I went to AA. I sat in the back. It was wrong. They weren't open meetings. I would sit. I would go late, leave early, and I would sit, and I would get a dose of the kind of spirituality that I heard from their voices, from what they experienced. It wasn't only their voices. It was what they experienced that brought them to a point where the addiction had stopped, and they were learning to live life in a different way. And that is exactly what I continue to seek. So there are meetings that I go to and I walk out, and they are filled with spirituality. Those are the ones that I seek. I seek the people who have what I want. I listen. I try. And it is ongoing. It's exactly what everyone has said here today. It's ongoing. It's an ongoing search. I'm presented every single day of my life with different situations, different circumstances, and the solution is the same. I was saying this to myself this past week. It's just more and more God. That's what it is. It's maybe a little different. Maybe the dosages are different. Maybe the willingness is different. Maybe it comes through a different form, but that's how it happens. And I am not unique. I am not unique. I just kept coming. I'm just collectively what you are. That's what happened to me. I had no point of reference. So I had nothing to erase, but I had something that needed to be built. And so that is exactly what has happened to me spiritually. So that was my personal flight to God. And I wanted to address... I'm going to try to tie this into personal relationships, but it's actually God-inspired, so I shouldn't even make an apology for it. I wanted to be a person who, I would look at people who would get up in the morning. I didn't work. And I would look at people who got up in the morning, and they had these jobs. You know, I had these visions. I lived in Edison at this when I first started, across from Highland Park, and Johnson & Johnson had built a new building there, and I have a talent in art, and I thought, well, they're going to hire me, and I'll do package design. I mean, I had no experience. I never worked, nothing, but I had this, you know, grandiose vision that that's what was going to happen to me. And what happened was I was petrified to work. I was absolutely petrified. And I, through the sponsor, I always had a sponsor, by the way. I always had a sponsor. So through the fellowship, through the sponsoring, I told her that I was absolutely petrified. But what I wanted, what I saw in the morning were people who went to work and they got up, they had a job, they had benefits. You know, they did their day. They weren't going to be the package designer, you know, without qualifications. They got up, they were responsible, they showed up, it worked for them. They got a paycheck in their name. One of our traditions talks about being fully self-supporting. For me, that was very, very important, to be fully self-supporting. I'm not fully self-supporting yet, but I could be fully self-supporting if I chose. So what my sponsor told me to do, and this went on for 1 year. I circled in the newspaper, and I've told this story before, but it's an important part of my recovery. I circled in the newspaper for 1 year. That's all she told me. I had to get a highlighter, a pen. She didn't care. I had to get the newspaper, and I had to circle. That was it. And I did it. And I would say, well, I couldn't get the newspaper yesterday. So she said, well, there's today. Circle. Second year, she told me that I would have to pick those circles that I would call. So I picked them, but I didn't call. I think that went on for about 5 or 6 months. After that, I had to start making phone calls, but my anxiety level went off the board. And she said, but dear, all you have to do is call. You're not getting a job. Nobody offered you anything. So that's exactly what I did. I called, and then I had to get something to wear in case somebody responded to the call, and I didn't have the money, and I took stains out of what I was wearing, sweats. You know, I was a mom, at home mom, and then I began to get responses, and then I would cancel the responses because it was too difficult for me. One of the things was to be an interior designer, which I had evolved to. However, the job was only Sundays from 10 to 5, and I declined because I was afraid. I was afraid. So eventually, this is what happened. I'll just bring you here. I responded to one of these ads, and I liked the man on the phone. I connected with him. I said to myself when I hung, I said, well, sorry, but where you have to work is far for you. So I said, yes, it is. It's too far for me. And he said, well, if I get something closer in your area, I'll call you back. I said, fine. And I said, what a nice man. I hung up the phone. That was that. I didn't have to do anything. I didn't have to go through the next level of fear. And about 3 weeks later, he called me back, and he said, you know, he said, I have something for you. He said, it's not as far as the first one. It's a little bit closer. Would you be interested? What I did was I merchandised, what is it called? You know that video thing that children look through and you change the, right, that's when you change, you press the side. And well, that was my job. I had to go to the store at that time was called Bradley's. Five Bradleys. I worked 2.5 days a month, and I felt like I was in heaven. I got a paycheck, I think it was $37, was my money. Outstanding. Outstanding. I felt like $1 million. And I did that. I continued to do that. I learned what to do. I went. I went. I showed up, and I went. And then there was someone in the program, and what where my talents lied at that point. I always wanted to do window display work. And so there was someone in the program, and I would talk about this, but I never took an action because of this year. So what she did was there was a woman who was very astute in business. And what she said to me was, Binay, this is what we'll do. We will go together. We will be a business for that day, and we will walk into stores. And you can. I had photos of things that I had done, like, intermittently in window stores through my son. And we went into the first store, and I brought my photos, and he said, there was a girl there, and she said, well, can I hold on to your pictures? And this other woman from the program who took a half a day's work off came with me, and she said, she said, well, this is how we operate. This is what we do. And she presented it for me, and I stood and said not a word. And a day later, I got a call, and I got the job. And for 6 years, I did window displays in optical stores in New Jersey. And I also got a couple in New York. So that was seasonal. I still did the Bradleys. I had gotten a degree in teaching very early on. I never wanted to be a teacher, and I started to do that. It still wasn't enough, so I started to do sub work, and then eventually this kept going, and I did all three of these things. And then eventually I saw this advertisement in a newspaper. It was for, and if you're a teacher, you'll understand this, it was for the Thursday art teacher, and this was in Orange, New Jersey. And I went for the interview, and I got the job. So the subbing stopped. Everything else continued. It was one day a week. And eventually what happened with that job is I became the Monday-Thursday art teacher. And then my sponsor found an advertisement in the New York Times, and it was for a merchandiser in New York City for a pen company, visual merchandiser. And God bless you. And I'll never forget what this was like the day that I went for that interview. The belt on my dress kept opening. I got on the bus to go to New York, and the man yelled at me because I had a $20 bill and he couldn't change the bill, and didn't I know the rules? And I didn't. I really didn't. And he said, well, I'll have to see if I have change for you. And I was a wreck. Is he going to give me the money? Is he going to take the money? Maybe I should write the name, the number down of the bus. This is wrong. I saw at the end, he took out a wad of bills. He had the money, but he wasn't honest with me. And he gave me the change, and I went for the interview, and it just... These are the godlike moments. These are the kind of things that are unexplainable. They happen in my life. I'm aware of them. The chemistry was right. I showed up. There were three men who interviewed me. My belt opened every time. I was like this each time. I mean, I made it on time, and I got the job. So for 2 years, I did visual merchandising in the city 3 days a week, and I was a teacher 2 days a week. I gave up the Bradley job, and I gave up the visual merchandising and private stores. And eventually, the end of the story is that let me just tell you this part, because this is the part, last night I said that there's a part of me that respects me now. At the beginning, one of my sponsors said to me, "Binay, if you can handle a business meeting at an OA group, you can do this." Because that's how far away I was. My strength, hope, and experience came from here. What I did in the rooms gave me, and it didn't register, but it came from you and it went in. And as a result of that, I was able to go out. And as a result of going out, I began to see that I was capable, that I could function, and I gained a sense of respect for myself that I had never had before. Never. So, the jobs were wonderful. I felt like $1 million. And I did that for 2 years. And then eventually I was offered a full-time position. And I have been gainfully employed for the last 14 years. I am a teacher in Orange. And I have benefits. And I get my own paycheck. And it comes into my hands. And I determine what happens with the money. So how that relates to relationships, you know, put it in the category that you want, but it, for me, it's, I know what it is. It's a relationship with myself more than anything. And that was the missing piece. That was the missing piece, because the hole in the soul wanted to be filled up with everything, with things that I thought would bring me pleasure, but it didn't. It didn't. I couldn't get it. It's not long term. It's not lasting. It comes and goes that way. This is longer lasting if I keep coming back. Because of the situations in my life, things change. So along the way in the program, Codependence Anonymous came to the East Coast, which was a blessing for me. I am codependent. That was the illness that was in my house of origin. That was what permeated through the family. Both children, my sister and I, have eating disorders. My sister has passed away. She did not find this program. It was offered to her. And I also go to Al-Anon. That was a new one. It's not so new anymore, but that was next on the line. And I didn't qualify years ago. I was seeking. I did not know how to do these relationships, these personal relationships. So I was seeking a way. Show me a way. How do you do this? How do you deal with when person A does this? You know, how do I do that? I don't have the skills. I didn't have the life knowledge. If I had it, I would have been able to do it. I didn't. So initially I went to Al-Anon, and I always felt like a fraud. I would ask permission. I don't know anyone who is an alcoholic in my home, but these are the problems. Could I stay? And they said yes, but I never felt comfortable. Well, at this point I have one daughter-in-law who is an alcoholic and another one who has a problem with alcohol, but she has not said so. So I qualify, and I'm there, and I do these two meetings every single week, along with OA, and I still go to AA. These days I go to open meetings, and thank God they're open. They allow all fellowships to come, and that's how my week goes. That's basically what I do with that. But I wanted to tell you, along with the CODA, what happened to me was, the severity of that was equal to the severity of my compulsive overeating. It had the depth to which that went was the same depth to which my eating went. So I have been to two treatment centers for CODA, for codependency, and one of them gave me, both of them gave me life lessons. One of them was this is what I felt like I was operated on internally. I felt like they had cut my insides open and rearranged my parts, and then I was left to go out. I thought either this is the best thing that ever happened to me or the worst thing. I could not figure that out when I left. But I can tell you that as a result of that, I came home. Oh, and someone else had pointed this out. I think it was Margaret. What happened was what they did was they took away all outside media. There were no newspapers. There were no books. You were not to bring a book. You were not to write. There were no radios, no television. You had to be with you. You had to be with you. Quiet. To this day, when things happen, I shut everything off. And I just be with me. To listen to what it is. Because that's the other part of it. You know, I'm so focused on you being codependent that I lose me. I'm so interested in pleasing you that I don't know how to please me. And I learned how to please me, you know, get my hair cut and all of that, you know, the right weight scarf, all of that. But I did not know what it meant, what I needed for me in order to do the day and not self-destruct in any way. That was the part. So all media went away, and they did an exercise before we left. We were in a circle, and they had people coming around. We had to close our eyes, and they had people coming around, and they had they whispered in our ears, and they said, "There's no one in the world who is like you, not one person. There is no one who thinks like you do, talks like you do, walks like you do. Respect who you are. You are special." And I took that back with me because that was the piece that was missing for me. And let me just tell you this. That was 18 years ago. I was binging my brains out prior to this, afraid of everything. I had been humiliated with doctors and fat pics and diets and pills, not pills, but a vitamin, everything. I tried everything, and I just stopped trying. I was dying at that point, and I knew it. I was out of control and dying. And it came to my mind that since I was dying, what I wanted to do, what I was going to do, was I was going to try everything. I was going to try everything that was on the list that I was unwilling to try because I was dying. Something was going to happen to me, and I didn't know what, but I knew that I could not stop eating. I was not functioning. I was all of the bedevilments on this page. And I called a program outside of OA. I was still in OA, outside of OA, to help me with my food. I called this foundation and to see if they would take me, and they said, "Only if you have 1 week of sobriety under your belt will we take you." And I said, "Can I bring my food with me?" They said, "Usually we don't allow, but we'll allow you to do that if you have 1 week of sobriety." Not at that point, but when I got back from the treatment program, I started to go to a therapist again, and I became abstinent. I went to this CODA treatment program where they guided me towards loving and respecting myself. I mean, I was just at the tip end of that. And then I went to therapy. And the reason why I'm telling you this was that at that point, my head was as clear as a bell for some reason. And I went back into my world and renegotiated every single relationship that I had at that point. Someone spoke about this morning, and they said to have a voice of our own, but to say it. It's one thing to have it, to know it. It's another thing to say it. And in order to say it, I need the courage. And in order to have the courage, I need the faith. and in order to have the faith, I needed God. But all of that came before. And so I began to say it, and I learned what it felt. You know how you're in an awkward position, and someone says something that really that bothers you, and you don't say anything, and then you go away, and you say it to your sponsor later? Well, during that time, everything I said, I said it. I was able to say it. It showed me that I could say it. Maybe it wasn't the right way to say it. Maybe I didn't say everything. But I was given that gift to be able to go to you and say, I think when we were talking before, blah, 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 you know, whatever it was, that it came out. It came out. And I'm going to tell you something. Something happened this past week. It was the same deal. And it gave me that jump in my heart where I knew that I did the right thing. I knew it. I didn't hold on to the resentment. So it was in the experience of doing it, 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 that I began to be able to speak what was in my head, which improved the relationships. Now, let me tell you something. Some of them didn't stay, and some of them stayed. The formula is, you know, if we both want one another, God willing, we'll figure out a way that we won't have to say goodbye. You know, because I want you. And this kind of thing operates at different levels. It's easy for me to do this with someone I don't have much invested in, you know? It's much easier for me to do that because it's almost practice for me. So if I'm not fearful that you're not part of my heart and I'm not going to lose too much and that kind of thing, then it's easier for me to do that. When you're in my heart and I'm invested in you, it's a different ballgame. So I'm going to just tell you about my supervisor. My supervisor, this happened last week. He's nitpicking. An art store did an art show, and there were little blurbs underneath all of the projects, and he found that the comma was wrong, and I used the wrong tense in one of them. And he did this right before I was supposed to speak. This was about 2 years ago. So he's nitpicking again about something else. And the way he's doing this is through email. Now, I'm not so savvy with this, but I do it. But this was a conversation that went back and forth last week, three times, and the end result was that I spoke up. I spoke up. He's the authority. And the reason why, and this is the truth, the reason why it wasn't that difficult for me is because my principal will support me 100%. So I don't feel that great a loss. But I still feel, it even had it on the paperwork today, you know, are you afraid of authority? And I am. You know, I want to please you. I want to please you. And I can't please everyone. Not everyone is going to like me. That's an uncomfortable feeling for me. So I went home, renegotiated all of those relationships, and then I started to go to meetings regularly, and CODA is very much a part of my life. And it's not that I don't operate codependently, that's initially what comes up, like I get hungry right away. That is what comes up for me. However, this is what happens. It happens, I call. I heard this at meetings, they call them the immediate, you know, it says in the big book, immediately we turn, immediately. Immediately I call because this kind of information I don't know how to sort through. And then I pause. I pause. Before there's any kind of response, I pause. Because I don't know very often what to do. But this was the jump in my heart. The jump in my heart was that the first email to respond to him, I had a therapist help me and my sponsor. The second email, I had my sponsor. And the third one, I did on my own.
You know, that was it. That's the joy. The joy is in, I did it. You know, I said it. So, those are the treatment programs. And don't get me wrong, I was afraid. I mean, I see his emails and I go, oh, you know, I don't want to do it. And it's not over. This saga is not over because the committee that I'm on changed the date that I asked for. And so we'll see what happens. I don't know today. And this was also mentioned before. And it came in bits and pieces. And it keeps repeating itself, like, God bless you, in the last year or so. It has to do with staying in the moment. Staying in the moment. Staying in the moment, living right now, one breath, then the next, because I don't know, I really don't know. So, but what's happened to me with my relationships is that I have found a way to live one day at a time with the power of God and with the power of this program. And what this brings me to, this is where it brings me to a point where if I have no control over them and what they do, what do I do now? What can I live with? What can I live without? Where do I want to be? What is important to me and what is not? I have a level of what I can live with regardless of what they did. Regardless. How can I live best? Is this workable? Is it not? And those are the questions that I ask myself as I do one day at a time. And when I do all of this, I find love for myself and others beyond my wildest dreams. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Would you have ever known that she was nervous? And I don't know what to say, and I have no idea what I could possibly give. And she gave us everything. She gave us her heart. Thank you so much.